copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Okay, let's start. I think there were two interesting questions over coffee that I got. One was, what do you do as a coach when the client or the coachee actually runs out of his ideas what he should do? It's important to say that anything is allowed in a coaching relationship if you agree on it. So if you agree with the client or with the church planter that you, if he asks, if he's interested, that you would give him some ideas or alternatives or models, that's okay. But I think the principle is just don't push any models on them. So present, if he, you know, just the situation about gospel-centered churches, yeah, you can, at the end, you can say, okay, you know, right now, if you agree, I can point you to some resources, some books, or maybe churches, or maybe other any churches that you know that model this kind of really environment that is gospel centered. What about maybe going there, talking to the leaders? But it's really up to you to decide what's best for you. You know, I'm not saying that you should do that or this. You have to decide what is most effective, what is most effective for you. So is that clear? So anything is allowed. You can give advice or give alternatives, but you have to agree on it and say, okay, this is, you know, I'm not pushing it on you, especially if you are in the position of authority over the person. You have to be very careful in really not taking the ownership back on you. So that's really important. Then there was a question about actually, you know, do you ask about just church planting issues or also his personal issues? My response was that actually as a church planting coach, you will probably do both, because everything is important, his personal also life and issues, church planting context. And very often when a church planter goes through training, they immediately will be faced with many challenges and issues and questions, and they will come into the coaching session as topics. So of course, that normally happens. But I think one last sentence or last thing, coaching, an advantage of coaching is actually that you can that you have a tool to get the right or the issue that is most relevant to the person. Because sometimes coaching in a church planting context is done like more like a supervision. So, okay, this was the action plan, these were the goals that you wanted to set, maybe did you achieve it or not and why? But sometimes, you know, the most relevant things are not in the action plans. Sometimes, I don't know, there is a relational crisis in the team or I don't know, there are some marital problems that can actually are big danger to the church planting project. And if you don't ask question that is open enough to find out what's the real issue, what's the most important issue for the person, you know, you can do an excellent supervising job, but actually without knowledge what the real thing are. So that's one of the advantages of coaching. Okay, any questions about the model interview that or the example that I tried to do? The question is, why did I pick the such a huge subject of probably church planting? You know, I gave him options. Yeah, he could choose whatever topic he wanted, either personal or church planting, although I prefer a little bit more church planting because we are doing church planting coaching network. You know, sometimes you can achieve some good results even in a very short time. Actually, sometimes the best results are made in the last 10 minutes. So when you are under time pressure, say, okay, we have just 10 minutes. Yeah, and we really need some you know, some good results. Maybe what is the thing that we should focus now on? So sometimes time pressure is also helpful. Any other questions? So, of course, but normally I would have 45 minutes, maybe an hour, so I wouldn't be in a rush to. So I would have spent more time on actually clarifying the area that he wants to achieve. Maybe also define it in more smart kind of smart goals or something that he wants to have at the end of the session. But because we had very limited time, I haven't finished that. Any other questions or observations? Yeah, the question is what I do when the client actually asks back questions about what I think or what I would do. I think first I would be very careful in giving any advice. And actually it would be a failure of a coach probably if a coachee is asking too many questions back. So I think if really we are in a circle, you know, not moving anywhere, sometimes it's good to maybe show some alternatives. But but your church much better than I do. You know everything that all whole context. I have no idea. I have no clue. You know how it can look like. So any advice can miss the point, or most of my advice would miss what's the real issue. So it's possible. Anything that you agree is possible. But of course, I can say, okay, this is my personal experience, maybe what I do in my church, but you have to choose what's the best for you. So I can respond if it's a specific question. But this is not my main role as a coach. Of course, I can answer, but you know, if we refocus attention to my advice and my expertise, it's not effective in actually helping him to find solutions very often. Or it's a temptation for a coach actually to impose some of his ideas, his models, and that could be a tricky thing.
Can I make a comment? One of the ways of measuring your skill in coaching is how much time you spend talking and how much time they spend talking.
Very often if coach, and that's one of the things that I mentioned in the Art of Asking Good Questions session, is that when a coach tends to ask too many questions, too complicated questions, it means that he wants to take over the agenda. So it's much better to have, you know, very minimalist approach to coaching, because, yeah, that's my experience from, yeah. The question is what you do when actually your client doesn't do things that you agreed upon to actually that he should do. I think there has to be some mercy, but it should be time limited. If it's really properly done, that your coachee actually agreed on the time frame, and you are sure that it was out of free will and that was relevant in his situation. Because sometimes you can impose your solutions to them, and then they are not motivated to do the goals that you agreed on, but they don't completely feel that they are relevant. So, but if they agreed, and if they don't respond, I think I would end it, you know, maybe after three sessions or whatever. So I can do my best to help them, but I think it can be part of the contract, maybe that you have at the beginning, if there is a contract. I don't know if you send a model.
Yeah.
So at the beginning, you can set some rules with your clients or with church planters. Okay, this is my role, this is my responsibility, this is the time frame for our coaching. Okay, I will lead you through maybe 2 years. I will meet you every other month. I will have a Skype call with you, and this is your responsibility. Okay, if we agree on some goals, you will do them. So it's important to define your role, or also to define some rules within the coaching relationship, and it helps you to then have a leverage actually. To say, okay, we agreed on that. Is there any problem with it? But you have to agree on them. Okay.
I just a comment, observation. I've had a few coaches in my life too, and one of the best ones, an experience was there were times where I asked this, one of your brothers were talking about, and I would say, I'm lost here. I'm either struggling, I'm hurting, or I'm it's not clear. And I would ask that question back. What do you think I should do? I'm looking for that kind of answer. And his answer was, you know, I don't know. And he would just let it and stop. And but then he would always come back and say, but we're gonna go to the Lord with this. Yeah. And he'd allow that burden to sink into his heart, and he'd start, at times he would weep, really, just literally weep, carrying that burden in prayer with me, to say, we don't know what to do. And so it wasn't just an escape to prayer, but even if it was, it was a very good escape. It was a very good reason to do it. And I learned from him. He modeled that for me, because we want to, you know, invent something or try a mechanism, and it was really... Let's just go to God and see what He can do at times. And it was very helpful, and we often don't... I think we underemphasize that sometimes. Yeah.
I think if you look at the structure of a coaching session, you see that there is a time of prayer at the beginning. That is actually not part of the business coaching session at all, because you don't rely on God at all. So actually, we really are together under God, under gospel in this all. So we need Holy Spirit. And also at the end, are there any obstacles actually? Why we are not disciple or Christ-centered church that would really focus on missional discipleship, you know? And the question is not just very often just the methods to have a right model. It can be something much deeper. So we should stop and pray together. Actually, when we don't know, it's an opportunity to ask God. So it's not just about our reasoning or about our rationality or rational solutions, but it's also about God revealing us the truth, and Holy Spirit who is leading us to the whole truth.
Well, sometimes I wasn't letting the gospel get down into my own heart.
Yes.
And then through approach to the Lord, the Spirit was like, here's your problem in the prayer. And then it's just, okay, now I have to be honest. He just brought that out.
And that's actually kind of a default system, that default situation of us all. We have to learn, and we, you know. So actually, one thing before the question, moments of silence, you know, where you're actually exposed to a situation when you have to think through these things or ask new questions. So say that's valuable at the coaching session. If it's not a kind of a, you know, stupid silence where you just don't know what to do or ask it. So constructive silence, you know, when you see that something is going on in church planter's head, you know, they actually, and that's the moment very often where something meaningful happens.
Yeah.
My question is very practical, but
also... Okay, so the question is about actually paying for coaching sessions in a context of church planting. I think Czech Republic, when you pay for something, you feel a little bit more committed to actually do something. So I wouldn't be against it. I think but sometimes church planters are not the most rich people in the world, especially if they move and find a new job. And so I think at least, so for example, we have a rule that church planting coaches at least should have a, you know, travel expenses covered, and maybe some small amount, but we don't expect a lot to be paid. Of course, in a business coaching, you pay quite a lot to your coaches. So, but I don't know anybody else who has experience with. I think normally denominations have some, or church planting projects have some coaches, but I wouldn't put a big burden financial on church planters, especially in initial stages of church plant. I think ideal state is really that the coach actually gets paid by someone to do this job, because it takes time, it takes energy. So it's more a matter of the financial structure of the church planting framework that there is, either if it's a denomination that provides that, or is it a mother church that pays for the time and of a coaching, or if it's done by a mother church pastor. But just people should be aware of that it costs money, and how much actually it costs in reality, or that is sponsored by someone or by a volunteer. So I think we should be, as Europeans, be more clear about that, because we tend to, you know, expect people to do anything for free, and that's also not fair to some coaches. So
It's part of the expectations that you set up in the coach's contract.
Yeah.
So if you use a contract, then the expectations are clear on both sides. The other thing that I'd just like to let you know, I'm coaching a non-believer right now, and he's growing spiritually through the coaching. So he's a businessman, and I'm offering free coaching to him, and he's growing spiritually and coming closer to Christ. So coaching is also an opportunity for you to go into the community and offer free coaching to somebody, and you improve your coaching, and you might also see some people come to Christ.
What I see in Europe, that very often you don't have, you know, 100 experienced church planting coaches available in around you. So especially the first generation of church planters and their coaches are kind of a guinea pigs. So how you choose the coaches when you have none? That's a good question in Europe. So what kind of training you give them? So we decided, for example, to work with either with some church planters that have experience but haven't done coaching themselves, so to train them, or at least to have some pastors or leaders who are coming from a missional church, really kind of growing church environment, because they tend to attract new leaders, and they coach them anyway. So even if they are not experienced coaches, just try to identify leaders who are respected and who have proven potential in developing other leaders, and then give them some basic training at least, and develop your group of coaches within your, you know, circle or network or church. Okay, any other comments? No. Okay, so well, how much time do we have actually? But I think it was helpful to discuss them. So, art of asking good questions. I think one of the key actually qualities of a coach is that they should have a set of questions that they use, that they are proven actually to help church planter to define what's the best solution for him. There is a first section about Jesus as master of riddles, questions, parables. So, and this was it was mentioned in the philosophy of coaching session, so I'm not going to spend too much time on that. But really, if you look at Jesus, amazing why he asks so many questions, why he actually uses so many non-directive methods of how to challenge people. And that's, I think, something that Jesus has in common with coaching, that maybe sometimes it's better to ask good questions than to give a good answer. And actually to think through some of the good questions, even, when, for example, you are facing a situation that you see something in the church plan that is not working well. Ask, maybe pray and search for a good question first before you give an answer. You can ask a good question about the area that is not leading, not manipulative, you know, that you want them to push them in a certain direction. But actually that would expose them to what's the problem. If you look at Jesus, he never actually answered the wrong question. He always tried to think about the right, what's the real problem, and then rephrased the question in a way that would help people to understand God's kingdom more. It's very interesting if you look at it. Sometimes he was asked question, but he had to rephrase it and find the right question, that would help people to understand. So who is my neighbor? Yeah, so many times you see that Jesus was asking more or was thinking more about the right questions. So and as you prepare for the coaching session, just think about it. Think about a good question that wouldn't, because when you just confront them, that's fine. but sometimes they are very resistant if you just say, okay, I see, you know, that you are not leading your team properly, you know, that people don't feel, you know, really committed, you know, and okay. And if they are humble enough, they will respond humbly. But very often, you know, it creates, you know, it increases adrenaline, and very often they just resist. So what kind of questions would you ask? Yeah. Yeah, so you can ask very simply, how do you feel about your team? Yeah, is it working well, or do you see anything that you have where you can grow as a team, in a teamwork? You know, is there anything that is bothering you within, or do you feel support, or, you know, anything? And the question is not directly confronting them. Of course, there are issues, especially of sin, where you have to confront them. But of course, there are also different ways how you can confront sin, and Jesus did it also in many other ways. So this question about Jesus and master of questions, you can maybe answer them by yourself. About typology of questions, there are closed questions and open questions, or instructive questions. You know, open questions actually give the person opportunity. They don't have a yes or no nature, but actually create space to for the person to find their own answers. And most of the questions that are listed here and that you are supposed to read actually for today are open questions. Very often church planting coaches tend to ask instructive or leading questions. Maybe shouldn't you consider reading Tim Keller's, you know, model of, you know, gospel-centered church. You know, just pretending that Tim Keller's, you know, method is the best, or any other leading question that just you even in the form of question, but you are imposing, you know, some models or something on the other person. Of course, there are evaluation and accountability questions. They are of course allowed in the context of accountability. There are the point E. About some types of constructive questions. There are questions that set the stage. These were the questions that I asked. Okay, what's the area that you would like to work on? What's the most relevant for you now that we can you know, spend time on? What's, you know, all these kind of questions that are asking about what's the most important thing for them. Then I asked about the future, kind of desired situation, ideal solution. Okay, tell me more about, you know, in a year your church is really, you know, gospel-centered or Jesus-centered church. What's different? How it looks like? And you can ask many questions. How people will recognize in real life how you know that we are now a gospel-centered church. You know, in many contexts. So it's also future projection coaching questions. There are some questions that put them off balance. So one attempt, maybe not very good, was asking, you know, if you were not there, you know, as a leader, and the system, and you know, other people could play a role in transformation of his congregation into a gospel-centered church. What would happen? So. It was an attempt to say, okay, if you are not part of the equation and you are not sharing it just from a pulpit, what other ways are there? But sometimes you just, you know, it needs creativity and experience to ask such questions, and not always you succeed. But it's really objective of having new perspective, or you can do even some role plays. So say, maybe he is. Seat of a pastor, but let's change it, and you are a member of your church plan. How do you feel about actually, you know, not being a gospel-centered or having a gospel-centered lifestyle? So you take them from their context, and now they have to think through maybe what their members are feeling or thinking about, and so you change context and you provoke them to think differently. Uh, paradoxical coach questions. There is one example of that in the list of questions. You know, if this problem would be the, you know, great opportunity for growth, you know, how, you know, what do you think about that? You know, if it's the greatest opportunity you have, you know, for change, just, you know, paradox. Maybe it's not the biggest problem. Maybe it's the best thing that you are in right now. You know, sometimes it helps. Or Jesus used paradoxes very often. Question changing person context. You can ask about solutions in a different context. You know, if you struggle with this issue in church plan, what about, you know, what's your experience from the business that you work in? How did you solve this kind of problem in a business environment or in a family environment? And sometimes they can come with solutions that, you know, that work in other contexts, and they could work in their own. So that's or in the church planting. Parables, miracle questions. If God did a miracle, you know, what would happen? How it would look like? What kind of miracle would be necessary? Questions focused on the resources and exceptions. That was a question that I asked about if he knows or if he knows about examples in his church when it works really well. Okay, gospel-centered church. In what areas in his church it works well? Or if he knows about other churches that their practice is for him a model for that, how it looks like. So we are asking about exceptions. Where in your life it worked already? Or in which part of your ministry or church plant it really works and why? So asking about exceptions, asking about that. Think small questions. Sometimes the change is too big for people, and they are not motivated. So sometimes you need to think, okay, let's. What could be the smallest step in this direction that you have energy to do, especially if you really work with people who have a problem with motivation. This is important because sometimes that grows. Their power grows in when they can do at least something. So especially for people working with, for example, homeless people, you know, this is extremely important. You know, what's the smallest thing that you can do?
One of the other things that's interesting about his problem on the small things is to say, what are all the parts of your church? And where's one that you think you could change to become a gospel-centered church? So you can break a big problem down into a small part of the problem instead of the step.
So 11, about future behavior change. Okay, how if people behave differently, they in the groups or in the evangelism of their church, how does it look like? So you're asking about behavior change in something practical, and who will see it actually? You can also use scales, just to skip some. Sometimes, you know, I could ask, okay, your church, you say that you want to have it to be a more gospel center, but on a scale from 1 to 10, where do you see your church right now? Is it 2 or is it 8 or is it 6? And it is relevant just for when you define, okay, where, you know, if it's 6, it's not that bad. But if it's 1, there is also some serious problem. So then what kind of change you see? So that also can help to clarify the reality, the R part. And the last 10-minute question I think mentioned. So that's it. I don't know if any, do you have any questions about questions? Of course, there are many questions related to some key areas of church planting, gathering your team, having a vision, commitment with a team, developing discipleship culture, your missional strategy or strategy of reaching non-believers. So you have to have arsenal of questions that are related to the content of church planting. So and you And especially in the context of training, you should keep asking these questions as they come, because they are keystones, kind of key, you know, elements of church planting process. So, but in context of asking what's the real now urgent topic for them, yeah, this could be helpful. Okay.